Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit SurreyFarms.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome back to No Chefs Allowed. I'm Megan O'Connor in my kitchen in Chicago, and I am here, as always, on Monday evening with my sister, Tricia Keel. Say hello, Tricia.
Hi, everybody. I'm here in Columbus, Ohio, and I'm super excited about this show.
I know, because we have
one of
our favorite people on the show today. We're pretty excited about it.
I am excited about it. But not only that, but it's fancy. It's a fancy show. I love anything that makes me feel special and fancy, and today's show does that.
That's right. And if you guys think we're cooking with champagne or caviar, you are wrong.
Or diamonds.
We're cooking with salt today. We're cooking with salt today, and lots of fun different salts to talk to our friend Tom Erd about. Tom is the owner and superstar from the Spice House in Chicago, and he also has some stores in Milwaukee, and he is a pal of ours. He's been on our radio show before, and he taught us all about lots of different spices. I think we made curry with Tom before, didn't we, Tricia?
We did, and I've made my own curry. I mean, I still use that skill, and I give it to people as little gifts when we go over to their house, and I look like I know what I'm doing, which is the goal of No Chefs Allowed, to appear that you know what you're doing.
That's right, one ingredient at a time. So, folks, that's what No Chefs is about. We take one ingredient a month. We work with it for the entire month. We overfeed our family one ingredient a month. But in the meantime, we learn a lot about that ingredient and discover other ingredients that go with it. Like today, I was just telling Tricia before the show started that I bought some preserved lemons, which I have never bought before.
Yes, tell me about them.
I will, because I just tasted them. So it sounds like it's the kind of thing that's pretty easy to make, but you have to plan ahead. It takes a month or something to do it. But it's basically, you know, a whole lemon. These look like they were quartered and then shoved in a jar with salt and I'm not sure what. I have a recipe here, because I am going to try and do it myself. But what's really amazing about them, so you take them out of the jar and they have brine all over them and you rinse them off and get all the pith out of the inside and any you know, remaining seeds that are in there. And I thought they were going to be like super lemony, but they're also really salty.
Because they're lemons.
Because they're lemon that have been sitting in salt. So I know I shouldn't be shocked, but it's like this. I'm eating it now. Can you tell?
Yes, I can.
You hear me eating. How rude. How rude of me. Anyway, they're like mushy and they're tart and tangy and salty all at the same time. So they're perfect for our salt show.
They are perfect for our salt show. So what are you making on our salt show? Because when Megan said to me, let's cook with salt, I thought to myself, well, how can I pick a recipe? Because they all have salt in them. So it was kind of difficult. But Megan, what did you choose?
Well, I am making
Salted buckwheat?
No salted buckwheat, although buckwheat is the monthly ingredient, folks, so get your buckwheat on. I am making charred okra
with
tomato, garlic, and preserved lemon. And you may say to yourself, well, why did you pick that on the salt show?
I said it to you.
I knew you were going to say that. So the answer to the question is because Tom, earlier when we talked, told me to get myself some Malden sea salt. So I did. I went to his store and I got some Malden sea salt. And I was looking through this cookbook, my new favorite cookbook called Jerusalem. And in this recipe at the end, it says in the ingredients list, Malden sea salt.
Well,
there you have it. Now I have a real use for this sea salt. I'm going to learn about it a little bit more from Tom today. And I'm going to put it in this dish. Now, this dish is like, I think it's supposed to be served warm, but I'm deciding that I'm going to serve mine room temperature or maybe even a little cold, and I'm going to use the sea salt at the end so that I keep the crunch on the salt because, as we can talk about as we taste some of these salts and look at them, the Malden sea salt has the most amazing crunch.
I'm excited to learn about it because I haven't, I have it here too. And by instructions, and I haven't opened it up.
You haven't opened it?
I'm intimidated a little by my fancy ingredients, so I was going to wait until Tom was on the show, so I was sure not to ruin it.
Well,
or
Tom,
do what you told me to do, which was take a bath in it. So
that's right. I knew you wanted to feel all fancy and special, so I thought you could just throw your salts into the bathtub and have a go at it.
I know. I didn't have time for that, but that's why I didn't open it because I thought maybe on a whim I might just go for it, but I didn't.
Okay. Shoo. So we still have a show. Thank goodness.
So you're a fan of okra, aren't you?
I love okra.
Not a huge fan, but I think maybe because I haven't learned to make it. So maybe we need to do that on the show because I think it's slimy.
It can be slimy. We'll see how this turns out because I'm charring it dry, like not even in olive oil or anything. You just heat up the pan and throw those babies in and get them all kind of blackened on the outside.
What are you going to
say? I love pickled okra.
That's what made me think of it. That made me realize that you're an okra fan because you eat pickled okra and now you're choosing to make okra. So
I consider moving
that makes
south
you a fan. You really?
Because I can't find the pickled okra I like here in Chicago. So I've thought about just packing up the whole house and moving to North Carolina or something.
Well, you know, if you did that, you could also make your own salt because you'd be by the coast. So in preparation for this show, so one time on the Food Network, there was a question to like the Food Network Stars of Tomorrow or whatever that show's called. And that sounded like a soap opera.
I have an idea. Stay tuned for the Food Network Stars of Tomorrow.
Focus on salt. Okay. Salt. So anyway, one of the questions was, what are the different kinds of salts or how? Anyway, the answer was all salt is sea salt. And like, you kind of knew that, but you didn't know it until somebody said it like that. Like, all salt comes from salt water, right? You can't.
Well, I don't know. That's why we're going to talk to Tom, because, you know, some of these salts come from rocks, mountains, whatever, but maybe they were undersea at some time.
Yeah, I want to know because, so I also saw this thing in Kinfolk magazine, which prompted this whole thing about a guy who's making salt on the Pacific Northwest, so off the coast of Oregon. And basically, when you look at a picture of him, that's a beautiful photograph, by the way, but he's in the ocean with 5-gallon buckets pulling out water. I mean, his overhead cost for product is nothing. He goes to the coast. Well, he had to buy those buckets, but he goes to the coast.
And he has to dry them, and he has to figure out. There must be more to it than that.
Oh, right. So I got curious, right? I'm like, we're going on vacation this summer. Maybe I'll pick myself up some seawater, some
salt. Maybe just get some buckets and pack them in the back of the minivan.
I mean, who needs clothes for vacation? We'll just keep room so that we can bring back 5-gallon buckets. But so basically, then I got curious because he's making it on the Pacific Northwest, and it's like fancy salt, right? But
I don't know how fancy it is, but okay, yeah. He's selling it as fancy salt. And it has a good name, I'm sure.
It's called hand harvested. So then it's fancy if it's hand harvested salt, right? But anyway, so you take the gallon buckets home and you basically boil the water or simmer it, depending on how much time you have, because it could take days and weeks, and that's why people don't do this.
It might ruin your vacation.
It would. It'd take the whole vacation to make myself a cup of salt.
A teaspoon.
So you boil it down and then the salt, you know, presents itself as the water evaporates. And then once from what I read, I have not done this, but once it's like, wet sand, then you pull it out and put it on trays and you dry it. And there you have your salt. Now, of course, you probably don't want to go to the most polluted part of the ocean and pull out your
But you could probably, you know, depending on what flavor that pollution presents itself in, you could probably
market it.
Round it. Yeah. Yeah.
Don't pull out the 5-gallon bucket next to your 3-year-old who's swimming because you just never know what's going to happen there. I'm just saying. Actually, I'm not worried about her. It's my 10-year-old I'd be a little more nervous about. But I mean, it's possible to make your own salt in your own home, but everywhere I read it was like, it's not economical at all. I mean, you spend more time and resources trying to drive more gas to drive the 5-gallon buckets from North Carolina back to Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah, maybe you should just stick with your curry powder as gifts and forget about the salt.
Yeah, I am. But so I'm excited to open up my fancy salt here. And so that was a long story because I didn't even tell you what I'm making.
No, you haven't told us what you're making today. What are you doing with your salt?
So I'm going to make soft pretzels because I'm excited because I have 4 different salts here. And then I'm going to top each, you know, top them with different finishing salts. So I've got a black salt and a fennel salt. And then the Maldon. How do you say it?
Maldon.
Maldon is the bear in what's that movie? Brave. But anyway, Maldon salt. So.
Thank you for the Disney reference. Very nice.
I like to make sure I get a well-rounded discussion in on this show. But anyway, so
I'm here. It's funny though. I'll have to tell you a story. So over the weekend, I was kind of playing around with these salts and, I just made some pita chips and, you know, threw them in the oven with some olive oil. And so when they came out, I put the black salt on them and no one would eat them because they kept saying, you put pepper on it. And I'm like, it's not pepper, I swear. Taste it. It's salt. It totally flipped everybody's mind.
Man.
You expected to bite into that and find pepper and instead you found salt.
That's funny because now I'm remembering when Adam was young, he called it salt and black salt. For salt and pepper.
Oh, we'll see.
He was ahead of his game.
He's always ahead of his cooking game, that guy.
That's true.
So just, you know, beware, cooker beware, that, you know, it may look pretty, but it might just flip out your guests.
That's true.
They think that it's loaded with pepper when in fact. So you can play some mind games with people with salt. That's what I learned over the weekend.
That's cool. It is interesting when you think you're going to taste one thing and then you completely taste another. That is kind of an interesting thing. Well, I'm excited to make soft pretzels because I've done this with the kids before, but never this fancy. And they love them. And it's just a basic dough, a yeast dough. And so I did that before the show and I let it rise. So now I'll be ready to, when we're talking with Tom, to roll out my pretzels and get them in a hot oven covered with fancy salt. So I'm excited about that. And the kids are going to love it because we're having that for dinner.
That's what I was going to say. You've made donuts for dinner on this show. You've made, you know, your kids must love coming home to dinner on a Monday night.
Just so you know, every time I do something like that, it is always served with a veggie tray. We always get our fiber here at the Kale's household. So you have a good excuse if you're serving soft pretzels and cheese sauce. I'm going to make that. And
yeah, there's...
I've already created a veggie tray and we have fruit. So.
Okay.
I think we'll be good today. And then tomorrow we'll just see kale.
All day.
All day.
And dinner.
Yeah.
My okra is charring nicely. It's getting a little bit brown on the end, on the skin. I'm going to let it go a little bit longer here. I'm doing it in 2 batches so that it has room.
Yeah.
In this pan that you bought me for my birthday. Thank you. Love
it. You're welcome. You're welcome. Everybody needs a good pan in their kitchen. That's
and
fancy.
And since Trisha believes that I don't have any, she bought me one for my birthday. So now I have exactly 1 good pan in their kitchen. Okay. In my kitchen.
Takes a village to make dinner. That's what I say.
Right. That's right. All right. Well, I think let's take a break. And get Tom on so that we can really go after this salt conversation and see what we can learn and see what we can do with all these fancy schmancy salts that we have in our kitchen today.
Yeah, so
go ahead.
I just wanted to let you know that I also dressed up for this show because I was feeling fancy. So not only do I have fancy ingredients, but I look fancy even though you can't see me.
Well, I haven't showered today still. So I guess...
So I'm one up.
We're half clean.
Yeah, that sounds good. That's all you need.
All right. Well, now that you know our hygiene habits, I think it's time to take a break. We will be back in just a few minutes with Tom Erd from the Spice House, who's going to teach us everything we need to know. So we'll be back in just a few minutes with No Chefs Allowed. Welcome back, everybody, to No Chefs Allowed. I'm Megan O'Connor, and I'm in my kitchen in Chicago cooking up some okra. And I'm here, as always, with my sister, Trisha Keels.
Hi, everyone. I'm in Columbus, Ohio, cooking up soft pretzels. So I do sound like I don't give my family any nutritional value. And this is not true.
No, it's not. Go back through the archives of our radio shows. You'll see they had ice cream. They had orange souffle one time.
Oh, my goodness. Right. You're right.
You're right. Oh, well. I mean.
Oh. That? Huh?
My kids come home after school and they're like, oh, what's that? Oh, is it Monday? Oh, darn.
Oh, well. Well, today I'm making soft pretzels for dinner, but I'm going to be putting a huge veggie tray and fruit salad out at the same time. So we'll be good.
All right. Take a picture of that.
I will.
Look for that on our Facebook page, No Chefs Allowed. You'll see Trisha's veggie tray along with her pile of soft pretzels. Anyway, that aside, we are here today to talk about salt, and we have with us a good friend, Tom Erd, who is the spice merchant extraordinaire who owns the Spice House with stores in Chicago and Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and he also has quite an online presence, so if you're looking for something special, thespicehouse.com is the place to go. And Tom's here with us today to kind of teach us everything we need to know about the fancy salts we have in our kitchen today. Are you there, Tom?
Hello, I'm here in Chicago.
Hello. Hi, Tom. I'm so excited to have you back on the show.
Thanks.
Yeah, I learned so much from you the last time, and it was like learning that I could take with me and grow on. So I'm excited to hear what you have to say about salts today.
Okay.
Tom and I were chatting on the phone last week about this show, and he enlightened me on a few things. But Tom, give us, you know, you and Patty do a whole class on salt, so he knows salts well. Give us just a little of the history and maybe answer our question about, does all salt come from the sea?
Yeah, well, you know, as civilization evolved, it had to grow. People had to grow their civilizations around locations that had salt readily available. I mean, even if you had, even if you were raising cattle or raising goats or sheep, the animals needed salt. And if you had an agricultural civilization, you weren't taking in enough salt to sustain life, so now the people had to have salt. So as civilization grew, you had to be around a steady source of salt, and the locations on the planet are testimony to, you know, where the salt was. Mm-hmm. So you got civilization growing up around salt, and either it was, there's four ways to get salt. You know, you can sun-dry seawater.
You can use a bucket in the ocean. We learned that from Trisha just a few minutes ago.
Exactly. Yeah, drive to the ocean and grab yourself a 5-gallon bucket of salt water.
Yeah. Now, you get about half a cup of salt out of a gallon of water.
Okay.
So you can imagine how much work that is. Yeah. So you can sun-dry seawater, but you need low-lying land. So think of Louisiana. You need like a marshy ocean area. And if you're going to sun-dry seawater, you need a lot more evaporation than you have rain. So, because if it rains, you know, you're screwed. You're gonna. Think of like northern Africa, southern France, Louisiana, where you've got a lot of warmth, a lot of evaporation. Dry winds are great. Okay. The other way to get it is to evaporate salt springs. You know, there's huge underground veins of salt on a lot of the planet. Huge underground veins in central China, central Europe, Africa, India, and as water springs flow through those veins of salt, when they bubble up to the surface, they're really, really salty. They're about 10 times saltier than seawater. So you evaporate that, and it's far more efficient than evaporating seawater. That's the second way of getting it. And they use that method usually really far inland when you're away from oceans. The other way to get it is to dig a hole into those underground salt veins and just mine it up. And then the fourth way is in some parts of the planet, the salt is just sitting on the surface, like in Utah or in Mexico. You know, in Utah, they call it the Bonneville Salt Flats. There's big areas in India that have it just laying on the surface. You just bulldoze it up, clean it up, and you've got salt. So there's four ways to get it.
Huh.
You know, the most ancient way, though, is sun-drying seawater.
Mm-hmm. There you go, Tricia.
Right, because when I Googled it, I didn't find one person who said, you can do this yourself, just go find a salt vein and mine it. that wasn't readily available to me, because I guess you just can't do that unless you were
talking about all salt being sea salt, and that's very true. Even those underground veins that I'm talking about,
mm-hmm.
those underground veins were left there by prehistoric oceans that were dried up and covered through by millions and millions of years of sediment. So, you know, when you go to Utah and you see the Great Salt Lake, it's like 30-some miles long. Well, that's mm-hmm. the last remaining puddle of a huge salt lake or salt ocean that used to be in the middle of the United States. And it's dried up to the point you've just got the last remaining puddle, the salt lake.
That's funny. It's one big puddle. Okay, so here's a question then. That's really interesting. So do I get taste variances if I'm getting the salt from different places, or is salt salt? How do you like that for a sophisticated question?
Salt is NaCl, sodium chloride. Okay? Sodium is a metal, and chloride is a poisonous gas. But you put the two together, and you have salt. Now, sodium chloride is sodium chloride. However, in the ocean, if you dry ocean water,
mm-hmm.
which is about 3.8% salt,
okay.
you're going to get probably 96% sodium chloride, and then another 4% of really, really good trace minerals, iron, copper, zinc, iodine, selenium. These are real good for us. Now, the question is, if I dry seawater, am I really going to taste that 4% that's trace minerals? Some people will say, of course I can. And others go, no, I just taste salt, you know. So it depends on your palate, you know. Also, different parts of the ocean have different combinations of those trace minerals. Some parts of the ocean might be real high in iron and low in selenium. Other parts of the ocean are real high in iodine, like areas where there's a lot of seaweed or a lot mm-hmm. of kelp. They're going to be real high in iodine. So there could be a real slight difference as to where, which ocean water you evaporate.
Huh. So, you know, you said iodine and that kind of thing, and I'm looking, it prompted me, because I thought I read this, and I looked at my Malden sea salt, which I'm excited to learn about from you, but it says, this salt does not supply iodine, a necessary nutrient. So I thought iodine was in all salts, but I guess I'm not right.
No, it's in sea salt. It's in unrefined sea salt. Now, the FDA... the way I understand it, the FDA makes them put that on the label because the salt company is not adding iodine. So, in other
uh-huh.
words, when you get Morton salt in the grocery store for, 50, 60 years, it'll always say iodized sea salt, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so people kind of got dependent on hey, if I just use a regular amount of salt every day in my diet, I'm getting enough iodine, which was probably the case. But nowadays with these natural sea salts and with the changes in our diet, the salt doesn't necessarily have to be iodized anymore. But the FDA makes us tell people that we're not putting iodine in it.
Got it.
Although iodine is naturally occurring in sea salt. Does that help?
Megan, what are you doing over there?
Lighting the place on fire.
Sweet.
No, I'm making my okra over here, and the pan is just really hot, and I just added some lemon juice to it, and it did what it's supposed to do.
It made some noise.
It made some noise and some steam and some, yeah, smells great. Well,
my dinner is so quiet because I'm just rolling out soft pretzels. So just so you know, folks, I really am doing something. I'm just very quiet.
Oh, goodness.
Okay, so, Tom, can we talk about the salts that we picked up?
What did you pick up?
What did we pick up, Megan? I think Megan and I were supposed to pick up the same salts, but I think we ended up picking up different ones. So, Megan, what do you have on your countertop?
I have the Malden sea salt, of course. I have Hawaiian sea salt in both black lava and red.
Ooh.
Alea. I don't know how to say that. Then I have Himalayan pink salt, and I have Portuguese sea salt.
I have the Malden salt, and I want to learn about that for sure. I have a Hawaiian black salt as well. I have a fennel and salt mix with organic fennel pollen made in Italy.
Oh, love that.
Yeah.
Yak, you should have a good time.
It's going to be a good Monday. I was cracking up, though, because this is from Italy, and it says ingredients, salt, 90%. And then it says fennel seeds, black pepper, oregano, white pepper, laurel, grass pepper, curry, fennel pollen, thyme, juniper, pimento, and mustard in varying quantities. I'm like, leave it to the Italians to not have to say specifics at all. We just threw a little of this and a little of that. But, and then I also have an oak smoked Chardonnay finishing sea salt from France. Whew. Which is really fancy.
That's why you're so fancy today.
I know. Me and the French, we're getting to know each other better.
Right. Started with crepes. Now we're on smoked Chardonnay, sea salt, finishing this and that. Okay.
Yeah, that's going to be the best soft pretzel you ever did eat, just so you know. But, okay, so can we start with the Malden sea salt?
Well, okay, so Malden is a town in Sussex, England, and they get too much rain to evaporate the stuff in the sun. So they evaporate it in big pans. And they put gas fires under the big pans, and they evaporate the seawater. Now, they discovered some time ago, maybe a century or two ago, that if you evaporate the salt at a certain temperature, I think it's really, really hot, and you blow certain types of fans on it, you get this wonderful flat crystal that will form on the top as the water is evaporating. And that crystal is different than any other salt crystals because of the water that it's taken from and because of the temperature of the evaporation. And you get this really, really cool, thin flake. Some of the flakes, when you look at it, can you see some of the flakes are almost like a quarter inch by quarter inch?
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're real thin. So sometimes you can put this stuff on meat or vegetables and actually kind of see it melt into the food. And it's got this real cool, al dente crunch to it. It's really light, really fluffy.
It looks like you broke a piece of plastic, you know, like.
Yeah, but you can see through it, can't you?
Or snow. It looks a little bit like snow.
Taste it. Well, just crunch it.
The stuff that, I mean, I think that your Portuguese one looks like snow.
Now my Portuguese one does look like snow.
Yeah.
Like it's even softer than the Malden?
Yeah, yes. Way softer.
Yes, it's pure white. It looks like freshly fallen snow. And the way they get that one is, you know, there's a series of salt ponds in these low-lying areas of the ocean. Remember, it's got to be like low and swampy. So they build these ponds. Essentially, it's big planks of wood that separate the ocean from the swamp. And they move the water from one pond into the next as it gets saltier and saltier and saltier and evaporates until in the last pond, after about 2 years of drying, the salt becomes super saturated. In other words, now it's about 25% salt. Starts out at 3.8% salt, Last pond, it's 25-26% salt, and it's so concentrated that the salt crystals start forming on the surface. Now, if the wind is right and the sun is right, you can skim that off the top, and you get this beautiful snowy flake. And that's why they call it Portuguese salt cream, because it's like doing the cream, like you're skimming it off the top. Now, if they do the same thing in France, what do they call it? They call it the fleur. They call it the fleur, the flower of the salt.
One says on my Oak Chardonnay finishing sea salt. It says these fleur de sol, salt
that's
flower
right.
crystals.
So that's fleur de sel, and when they skim it off the top, it's still kind of wet, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's got to lay kind of on the banks for maybe 6 months to a year, depending on the weather. Well, if you take that stuff that's on the banks, the fleur de sel that's on the banks, and instead of waiting for it to sun dry for 6 months to a year, let's take it over to a pan. Let's cut up these Chardonnay casks that nobody wants anymore, and let's burn those under the salt, and the salt will pick up the flavors from the old Chardonnay cask. Now, the question is, are you going to taste the Chardonnay?
Let's try it. Trisha, try it. Do you taste the oak?
But I guarantee you will taste some smokiness to it. And that's a cool flavor, kind of a smoked salt.
It does taste good, and I can taste the smokiness.
I
will admit, we have like a smoked salt that I got at Trader Joe's.
Yeah.
So it's not as fancy. But my husband was making burgers, and he used that. And when we were eating them, my oldest son said, "This tastes like a breakfast sausage." And it was because of the smoked salt. Like, it really add a different flavor.
It does.
To the burger.
We need to take a break, actually. So I'm sitting here eating some of my okra and dipping tomatoes into these different salts. So I'm going to be drinking a lot of water this afternoon. Anyway, let's take a quick break. Tom, if you can stick with us a few more minutes, we'd love to chat a little longer.
Okay, I can hang for a bit.
All righty. Cool. So, folks, we'll be right back in just a minute with No Chefs Allowed.
Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Edwards Suriano hams are aged to perfection for no less than 400 days and hickory smoked to achieve a deep mahogany color. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. Their exclusive curing and aging recipe produces a unique flavor profile that enhances the quality characteristics of Berkshire pork. Optimum amounts of pure white fat marbling contribute to a flavor that's a delicate, perfect balance between sweet and salty. For more information, visit www.surreyfarms.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to No Chefs Allowed. I'm Megan O'Connor here in my kitchen in Chicago, and as always, here with my sister Trisha. Well, I'm not here with my sister Trisha. My sister Trisha's in Columbus, Ohio, in her kitchen.
Yes, and I love that you say as always, because it makes me think that we're together on these headsets at all times.
That's right.
Not just on Mondays. Because we're not. We don't get to talk like this all the time. So this is a fun, No Chefs Allowed is just a fun time to catch up with my sister and cook with someone who doesn't live down the street from me.
Yeah.
Unless you decide to move down the street from me.
No, I'm moving south so that I can get more okra. So I'm going to be going south further than Columbus so that I can okra.
We can start our own No Chefs Allowed salt business, and I can bring the 5-gallon bucket from.
And then we can pickle the okra.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
I think that's it. That might be our $1 billion idea.
Each
wait, somebody's
thing of okra. Each bottle will be $6 million.
That's right.
By the time we do all that. Handcrafted, of course, for $6 million.
That's right.
Anyway. Okay.
Anyway, we are here today with our good friend, Tom Erd from The Spice House. And he's been teaching us all the important stuff we need to know about salt. And Tom, question for you. So we've talked a lot about the different ways we can get salt and we've looked at the different textures of some of these salts. What about the color? I mean, is the aesthetics of salt kind of a thing, a reason why people buy different kinds of salts and use them?
Sure. Sure. I mean, you know, first we eat with our eyes.
Ooh.
So, you know, you were talking about the black salt on the pita chips. you've got some red salt there. You've got some pink Himalayan salt. And, of course, a lot of that is eye candy. And, yeah, it's just salt. But, you know, anytime you can make your food look better, it's always fun. Now, salt in general will pick up the color of the bed that it's drying in. So, in other words, the black Himalayan or the black Hawaiian salt has been dried in a bed of lava rock. So it picks up the minerals and the color of the lava rock as it's scraped up off the bottom of the bed. The red Alae clay salt from Hawaii is dried in a red clay bed and picks up the minerals and the color from that red clay bed. The gray salt, you've seen Celtic gray salt. Celtic gray salt is the stuff, when the salt crystals form in the last drying pool that I was talking about earlier, and it falls to the bottom, you rake the salt up off the bottom of the bed. Well, it's not totally white as snow down at the bottom of the bed. You know, remember, this is ocean bottom, and it gets a little gray, you know. Huh. So and when it's skimmed off the top, it's perfectly white. So, you know, pure sodium chloride crystals will always be white. But when they're dried in certain different beds, you're going to get some different colors. The exception is that Himalayan one. Now, did you want to talk about that for a second?
Yeah, this pink one.
Okay. Yeah, the Himalayan salt is pink. And remember, all salt is sea salt. So there was these huge, huge underground ancient ocean beds that dried up and left these huge veins of salt in the earth. Now, when the tectonic plates moved and crashed into each other and formed the Himalayas, it also brought up these underground salt beds. And the salt beds, or the salt veins, rose with the mountains as they were crashing into each other and exposed some of the salt. So at certain times of the year, the upper passes of the Himalayas are open, and the monks take their yaks up the mountains, and they can mine and hew off big parts of these exposed salt veins.
Yeah, they don't even have to dry them then.
No, it's already dried.
You need
five million years ago. Yeah. And they load them onto their yaks.
Should we add that to our business plan that we need to buy a yak?
You need a yak, and then you can only do it when the mountain passes are open. So it'll be a seasonal business.
That would be fine, because we can do the ocean water half of the year, and then we'll go to the Himalayas and we'll get our yak for the second half.
Stuff is pink is because of the composition of the trace minerals in that part of the planet, and also geologists speculate that because of the abundance of sea life that was in those ancient oceans, it left some of its pigment. You know, like the shrimp, the crab, all that kind of stuff, left its pigment in the rock.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah,
that's crazy.
Cool.
Speaking of pink rocks, so I have this little salt block, which is pink, which I'm guessing is Himalayan pink salt block.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't done anything with it. It's very small. And I see these all the time, like bigger, much bigger chunks that look like you're supposed to cook on it. Or tell me a little bit about what I should do with this block.
Oh, you can do all kinds of things with it. You know, I mean, the basics are just use it as a serving platter for like butter or cheese or dried meats. You can get it cold.
That would be cute, though, on your table.
Oh, yeah. It's fun. Or you can get it hot. If you start with a cool oven, and you put the salt block in there, you can turn the oven up as high as maybe 400 degrees and slowly heat this thing up. And it'll hold that 400 degrees for a good, good long time because of its real high specific gravity.
Oh. And I can use that at dinner parties, going, don't touch the salt block because of its high center of gravity. What did you call it?
The high specific gravity makes it hang on to the temperature.
High specific gravity. That's when you have a dinner party with scientists. Throw that out there. Your scientist dinner party, definitely heat up the salt block. Throw that out. Go ahead, Tom. Sorry.
You know, there's also sulfur, calcium, potassium, magnesium in there. So, you know, it makes great bath salt. If you have nothing else to do with it, break it up in pieces and throw it in your bath water. It's great.
Oh, I thought I'd just gnaw on it.
I'm like, don't throw it in your bath, the whole chunk in your bath water, take a bath, then dry it off and serve your butter on it. That would not be appropriate.
Yeah.
You'd be like, let me tell you how many germs are on this. That'll be the other part of the science experiment.
I think heat it up to 400. I think it'll be okay.
That's true. Okay, everyone beware. If you go to Megan's house for a dinner party and the salt block is out, just beware.
Could have been in the bathtub just hours before.
Okay, so it looks like, I mean, there are really lots of interesting places that you can get salt, and they can change the color, and they are fancy, and I'm excited to use them, like, as decoration on this. But as far as flavor goes, I mean, are they, as far as flavor, what we've just discovered, right, is that they're all pretty much interchangeable.
It's salt.
You know, salt. I mean, my view is, and I will admit, I don't have that sensitive of a palate, but if I line 4 or 5 of those salts that you're talking about up, one right in front of the other, and I wet my finger, and I taste one, and I taste the other, and I taste the other, I taste salt. You know,
Here you have it, ladies and gentlemen.
I do not taste the 4% trace minerals in there. You know, I don't taste the magnesium and the selenium and all that. Now, some people say they do. And that's fine for them. But at the end of the day, it's 96% sodium chloride. I get a kick out of food companies that say, hey, we've reduced our salt or we've reduced our sodium content by using sea salt. Yeah, instead of being 100% sodium chloride, now it's only 96% sodium chloride in the salt we use.
We have uncovered the truth about salt today on No Chefs Allowed. Well, so I think the technical part of it is just really where it gets, for me, this is kind of changes how I look at these different salts and what I do with them. Because, I mean, like that black Hawaiian salt is so crunchy and it's like pebbles almost, versus the Malden sea salt, which is beautiful and crunchy, but in a different way. So.
Yeah, a lot of it is texture and what's pleasing to the palate.
Yeah. I'm excited to put this black salt on these soft pretzels because I think it's going to look super cool. And I've just finished up rolling these out and shaping them. So now all I have to do is dip them in this baking soda water, and then I'm going to sprinkle them with these different salts, and into the oven they go for about 8 minutes. And dinner is served. Ta-da! I like to say ta-da at least once a day, so now I got that out of the way.
My dinner's not going to be ready until I put butter on this salt block. I may have to go buy some bread just so I can put the butter on the salt block.
Good thinking.
Yeah.
Just
Tom, thank you so much for doing this today. This was really a fun show. I learned a ton, and I think I'm going to take, you know, I've got all these salts now. My dear husband went to Tom's store and bought me 4 different salts, which is what prompted us for this show. So I've got lots of cooking to do and lots of experimenting to do. Tricia, you have any other questions for Tom before we let him get on with his day selling spices to the world?
No more questions right now, but as I move forward, I can always hit you up on your Facebook page, right, Tom?
At the Spice House. You betcha.
Spicehouse.com.
Yep.
Follow. TheSpiceHouse.com, yeah.
TheSpiceHouse.com.
And we and me and my wife answer our email too. It's spices@thespicehouse.com.
All right. Sweet. Thanks so much. And folks, just so you know, if you need some asafoetida, Tom's your man.
And if you don't know what asafoetida is, just write him an email.
Because you should know. All right, Tom, thanks so much for joining us today. Have a great day.
Okay, thanks, ladies.
All righty.
Good afternoon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, Tricia, so you're about done with your pretzels. Yeah?
I just dipped my first one in the baking soda solution, and I'm sprinkling it with black salt. There was part of me that thought maybe I should wait and butter these and then put salt on them afterwards, but I'm too nervous that the salt will fall off and that it won't be half as fun, so I'm doing it now.
Okay.
Yeah.
My okra looks great. I think, actually, so this dish, you know, char the okra. You add, after you've dry charred it, then you're going to add in lemon, the preserved lemon,
mm-hmm.
And some olive oil, parsley, cilantro, lemon juice. And then you add in tomatoes, which I think, oh, and garlic, and then tomatoes. And I think I maybe let my tomatoes cook a little too long because they got a little bit too mushy. You know, I think I could have maybe, you know, put them in after I had turned the heat off. Might have been a better solution to that.
Yeah.
But like I said, I'm not going to serve this warm. I'm going to let this cool off, and then I'm going to add my Maldon sea salt to the top so that it doesn't really truly melt into it, so that mm-hmm. it keeps that crunch. But the okra is really good, and it isn't slimy. It's a little bit crunchy. It's cooked, you know, which creates a little of the slime effect, but I think the charring it on the outside and cooking it that way, it's good. It doesn't have, because it's the skin that gets all slimy.
Oh, really? I thought it was the inside that got slimy.
Yeah, now that I'm tasting it, it is.
Maybe it's just the way I cook it, though. Do you think this Maldon salt is going to hold up in the oven on my pretzel? Because it is, like, flaky and delicate. I'm doing it anyway.
It probably will melt. Try it.
Yeah. The other ones look a little more rocky. And I am going to, although, just talking to Tom, my one package says fennel and salt, so this is more of a spice blend.
Yeah, kind of like a garlic salt or a
smells
celery
good.
Salt. Yeah.
But now since we learned that fennel pollen is an aphrodisiac, I'm going to put it on here anyway because it's Monday and everyone needs an aphrodisiac on a Monday. So there we go. Well, cool. Well, I'm about ready to throw these in, and I think we're about ready to wrap up the show. Right, Megan?
Yeah, I think we are. So I wanted to, though, quickly to talk about next week. So next week we are going to be making focaccia.
Yeah, I'm very excited about it.
And what I understand from Tricia is that I have to get started like a week ahead of time. So
just
start tomorrow, I will be working on next Monday's show.
I might get a jump on it and just hang up here and get started. But yes, we're making focaccia from an expert, food truck expert who has been doing a charity event with me all winter long. And literally my kids say, hey, is the bread guy coming? Because that's how good his bread is, that he doesn't even have a first name. He's called the bread guy.
All right. I can't wait to talk to him, and I've got to whip out his recipe and figure out how I'm going to stage the making of the focaccia for next week.
Yeah, good call. Get prepared. But,
all right.
Okay. Well, thanks, everybody, for spending an hour with us and learning about salts. And definitely let us know what salts you picked up. You can talk with us at our Facebook page, No Chefs Allowed, or check out recipes at nochefsallowed.com. We love to cook with you. And yes.
We'll be back next week, 6:00 Eastern on Heritage Radio Network. Or you can grab our podcast at heritageradionetwork.com. But until next week, bye from No Chefs Allowed.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.